Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Friday Eve edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I want to thank my most recent guest, a fine one. Squeezed every second we could with John Nichols from The Nation. John, always appreciate when you come around. Glad to have him back here in America, where we live. He was traveling, if I had made that note. And hour two is certainly going to be for your phone calls. I'm making lots of time for the callers. So start lining up in the queue at 844-967-2789. And I'm going there in just a moment. But here is the headline of hour two, where we're starting. Donald Trump's got one big regret from January 6th. And according to Chris Saliza at CNN, his one regret will shock you. So sort of a clickbait headline. But you got to wait for your shocking for just a minute, because we're going to some very patient callers. Angie from Monroe, you are first this hour. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi. Oh, I just wanted to talk about McConnell. I guess all the teacher unions, pensions and all that was all in Russian money, I guess. And so when the sanctions all came about, then they, I guess they've lost a lot of interest or something, and like they had billions of dollars and millions of dollars, and it's gone down to thousands. It's like, so hopefully McConnell's hurt a lot. I mean, I feel bad for all these teachers, but I guess the same thing happened in Florida with DeSantis. But he did all the firemen and all the policemen. Now those guys are mostly Republicans, so he's actually screwing over a lot of his own voters. So I wonder how all this is going to go. I just wanted to mention all that since we were talking about
McConnell. Well, you know, I hadn't seen those headlines. I do see a couple of headlines.
Yeah.
Teachers union president calls for Russian divestment. Now in Kentucky, the teachers union retirement fund lost $3 million selling investments in a Russian bank, apparently. So there mm-hmm. was some loss. I got to think that relative to the overall holdings of the teachers in Kentucky, that's got to be modest. And why I say that, no small part, Angie, is because I look at the divestment thought process of the teachers in New York City. They got $104 billion teachers fund. Now, New York City may have as many teachers as the entire state of Kentucky, but, you know, I don't want to cheer against the teachers.
Just a quick update here. This is NBC News, really quick. They lost more than $3 million. The retirement system had invested $15.6 million in Russia's bank, and they cashed out at $12.4 million on February 23rd. So they lost $3 million on the transaction, but they divested on the 23rd to get rid of any Russian assets.
Well, that's good. Divestment, and ultimately, Angie, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I had not seen that story. I remember some aluminum oligarch making supposedly an investment in Kentucky, propping up Mitch McConnell's reelection campaign. And it seems if the reporting I recall seeing is accurate, kind of like the Scott Walker Foxconn Hail Mary, well, never actually bore fruit. You know, they make these big grandiose sounding deals, these Republicans. Well, look what I did, economic development. I gave away a generation of taxpayer dollars here in the state of Wisconsin in the case of Foxconn. But, you know, it's all going to pay off someday. We're moving into the 21st century. Broke. Just ask Scott Walker what happened to all the Foxconn jobs. they never came to fruition. Hell, they got an empty field out there in Pleasant Prairie. A couple empty warehouses as well. Thank you for your call, Angie. I'm going to keep moving down the list. 844-967-2789. Andy from Beaver Dam. My pal, how you doing?
Well, not too bad, Gertie. Another aspect of McConnell as it relates to the Supreme Court, his grudge goes way back against the Democrats, back to the days of Robert Bork.
Well, we've heard the term being Bork. Bork, yeah, told the truth. Bork, what was his high crime and misdemeanor? He'd smoked marijuana or something of the sort, right?
Well, I think the biggest thing is he really came out. He honestly came out and actually put forth his true feelings as a conservative. And at that time, they thought, oh, man, you know, I can't remember who was on the Judiciary Committee, but they basically said, no way, Bob, you're not going to get on, you know. And so as a result, he didn't get on there. But that really steamed McConnell. And, of course, Clarence Thomas was accused of sexual harassment by his under...
Anita Hill.
By Anita Hill. So, it doesn't substantiate what he did as far as Merrick Garland, but he's just been on it for the last 25 to 30 years to stop anything that comes close to a progressive jurist on the court, because he's just, you know, and he's pretty well been successful as it stands now with a 6-3 situation.
Yeah. Even with the impanelment of the newest justice, when Breyer retires and Ketanji Brown Jackson joins the court, the mathematical makeup of the court does not change one iota. So this lifelong battle that McConnell is fighting and waging, Andy, against what, the balance of the court?
The court, yep.
It doesn't change the balance of the court. What he did to Merrick Garland specifically changed the balance of the court. That would have turned the court.
Right. Absolutely. Merrick Garland should at least have gotten a vote on it, you know. I mean, at least, but they wouldn't even consider it, you know. Obama,
well, much like Ketanji Brown Jackson, Andy, many of the very same senators, because they're all like lifers. Once you get in, they never want to leave. An incumbent in the U.S. Senate's got a very high chance of being reelected. But anyway, Andy, some things will never change. But they actually have evolved. And what's evolved is the treatment of Supreme Court justices and being borked, you know, being treated unfairly. And depending on who you check, you know, Merriam-Webster talks about the unfair attacks on a candidate, a presidential nominee. But being borked also means to screw up your job interview. You know, I borked that up pretty bad. A little too truthful. You know, I'm guilty of being a little too Bork-like on the radio occasionally. Anyways, 844-967-2789. You know who else is guilty of a little too much candor, although you wouldn't think? Donald Trump. Sometimes he says the quiet part out loud and, you know, kind of exposes himself. And kind of that's been a weird superpower for the guy, right? He'll say the corrupt part right out loud, and you're like, well, it can't be illegal or corrupt, or he wouldn't say it out loud, but yet he does. He does. And that somehow inoculates him from consequence so very often. But what will shock you, according to Chris Eliza over at CNN, is Donald Trump's big regret from January 6th. I'm going to read into this piece. It's short. Donald Trump still hasn't learned his lesson. Well, that's not a shocker. More than a year removed from the January 6th, 2021, Trump told the Washington Post in an interview Wednesday, and Trump apparently did like a 45-minute interview, and lots of that coverage is at the Washington Post. But here is the strange part. The Secret Service said I couldn't go, Trump said. I would have gone there in a minute. Well, what did he tell the Capitol rioters? Before they were rioters, they were attendees at the Ellipse on January 6th. He gave that little speech. And he told them all, let's all march together down to the U.S. Capitol. Well, with 2020 hindsight, like 16 months of time passage, one of his still, to his claims, regrets, is that the Secret Service wouldn't let him march down Pennsylvania Avenue with the insurrectionist because he wanted to take that show on the road. A little bit more from Saliza.
We could have done so much.
Consider for a minute what the former president is saying there when he thinks back on a date that left several people dead and more than 100 police officers wounded. His biggest regret is that he didn't march with the mob to the Capitol building. Not that people lost their lives. Not that lawmakers feared for their well-being. Not that it took him several hours of watching the riot unfold on TV before issuing a lukewarm call for the rioters to go home. I love you. Go home. Right? Said something to that effect hours later on a recorded video. As Saliza writes, even by Trumpian standards, that is appalling. But it's not the only stunning thing he said in the interview with the Post. Trump also fixated on the crowd size at the Stop the Steal rally that he addressed prior to the riot. The crowd was far bigger than even I thought. I believe it was the largest crowd I've ever spoken to. I don't know what that means. Yeah, I don't know what that means either, Trump. But you see very few pictures. They don't want to show pictures. The fake news doesn't want to show pictures. According to Saliza, again, let's be clear on what Trump is doing here. He wants credit for drawing a big crowd to the rally expressly aimed at protesting the 2020 election. The same crowd that subsequently stormed the Capitol and left chaos and destruction in its wake. So to summarize, the two biggest problems with the January 6th from Trump's perspective are, one, he didn't go march to the Capitol with the rioters, and two, the media didn't accurately reflect the size of the crowd. In short, he just doesn't get it, or he just doesn't care. No regrets, no regrets. Come back, more Devils. We'll try not to leave you with any regrets.
Wall Street actually was the second tallest building in downtown Manhattan, and it was actually before the World Trade Center was the tallest, and then when they built the World Trade Center it became known as the second tallest, and now it's the tallest.